Hey there, welcome to the Folk School Radio Hour. I'm Julie Tomorrow, and I am joined here in the studio with Clint Grabhorn, and we are going to be talking craft and what it means to be a crafter and how we engage in our lives through craft and through different materials and just getting our hands working and our minds creating. So, Clint, welcome to the studio. Thanks for joining me down here in Viroqua today. And I'd love if you could just like introduce yourself to our audience and just let them know who you are and maybe a little bit of what you do and some of your things that you're involved in.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Glad to be here. So I am a lifelong resident of the Driftless area. I have been in La Crosse, Wisconsin for about 20 years now, and was born and raised on just on the other side of the river in Brownsville, Minnesota. So definitely have a deep connection to this area. And without getting into the long story of my upbringing, I've definitely kind of found myself more and more connected to this area through community, through craft and handworking communities, just like Driftless Folk School, but also through a variety of other communities, the musical community, outdoor recreation community, and just all of the things that sort of tie me to this place. I think as a younger adult, I was sort of questioning where I would find myself. And this place, the Driftless area, has really offered basically all of the reasons that I would need to stay here and thrive in a community. So.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds like, you know, that trying to find yourself and find your place in the world is very relatable, I'm sure, to many, many younger people. And yeah, and so you've found a lot of yourself through craft and through connecting with community with that. You are a wide and varied crafter, but you have been one of the more recent additions to the Folk School's teachers as a basket teacher. So I took a willow basket class with you, and that was a very fun way to get my hands back into willow basketry. And it was really interesting to see some of the baskets you've been making. How long have you been making willow baskets, and what is that journey like for you?
Yeah, I've been working with willow as a medium for about 5 years, and I say willow as a medium because I consider myself a generalist. I like everything from painting to sculpture to found object and relief printmaking and even music. So when I sit here discussing basket making with you, I definitely consider myself a generalist over a master.
Yes.
But what really brought me to basketry was really just kind of one of those life curiosities where it just sort of happened. And by coincidence, I found myself talking to the right people, the right mentors, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden I kind of became smitten with willow. I think about 5 years ago, working on another project, my wife and our neighbors, we've been basically turning our yards into regionally native prairie.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the challenges that we had was building trellises, obelisks, and wattles. And we were kind mm-hmm. of wondering where we find or source the right material. And of course, after a little bit of reading, we thought, well, willow was the right way to go. There's a lot of it around here. We just had to find it and then figure out how to use it. So of course, we went online and just kind of did a Google search of who's in the area selling willow or who might know a thing or two about using it. And we found some awesome folks in the Decorah area who were kind of glad to give us their information and sort of mentor us through this process. So, yeah, 5 years ago, we made that phone call, made a connection with some awesome folks who turned out they've been teaching basket making classes and working with willow and birch bark, all kinds of other natural materials for decades. So we just had an awesome connection, had an awesome conversation about using these materials. And I haven't looked away since. It's kind of had me pulled in. Everything about the smell of it to the tactile mm-hmm. experience of working with it to just being able to be part of sort of the beginning and end of that process, you know, whether it's harvesting willow wild or cultivating it, just being part of the beginning to end has been pretty interesting for me. So
so
about 5 years, and like I said, 5 years is a small chunk of what I know some of the people I'm learning from have been doing. And I've got a lot to learn, but it's definitely definitely been a great experience.
Yeah. Well, willow's a great material. It's so regionally abundant. And it is, like you were saying, that your first uses were for outdoors.
Yeah.
You know, these aren't baskets that are necessarily in a home. These were kind of architectural elements and sort of tools of like your garden space and your yard.
That's... Yeah. And for somebody who, I mean, I consider myself an artist and a craftsperson, I think there's something always so compelling about sort of the form and the function of a material. So when you can use something, but you also get to spend a little time chipping away at the beauty of that mm-hmm. piece, whether it's a wattle fence or a willow basket, you know, there's something about getting to balance those two things that I've always quite enjoyed. And that's what willow basketry has been for me, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. I know when I was in the class with you, you brought some examples of your baskets and... you've also started including pottery into some of your willow baskets, which I think it shows that you are that generalist. You know, you're kind of thinking outside the box, thinking outside the basket, if you will, and bringing in a material that is so hard and sturdy and, you know, concrete in its way, and then applying like willow, which is so flexible and can be so dynamic in how it's used and made for just very striking and also very functional baskets.
Yeah.
Where did that idea come from, or what was that process like?
Yeah, I think it's sort of exemplary of how my creative brain works in this regard. This was something that came about maybe just over a year ago now. I've been sort of playing with this idea of incorporating both willow and ceramic. And what happened is at the time I was working with willow and I had kind of taken a little time off to work with ceramics with a friend and colleague of mine. We were doing a fundraiser to actually support a mural artist in the La Crosse area. And yes. So I found myself coming back to being on the pottery wheel after years of not touching it and really being fascinated with creating vessels. So of course, my mm-hmm. brain is thinking, how could these two things interact? And I found myself thinking a lot about sort of the contrasting textures mm-hmm. of
yes.
willow, right?
Yeah.
Like you were just mentioning, there's a certain pliability and softness to willow when it's soaked and workable
yeah.
versus the sort of the solid nature of ceramic. And I think there was just an interesting creative challenge in trying to get them to sort of work together in kind of in harmony or in marriage
yeah.
with each other.
Yeah.
So that was interesting to me at the time. And it just became a creative challenge, if you will,
yeah.
to see if I could get those two things to work together. And then, of course, there's something about the color of clay bodies and the mm-hmm. color of willows mm-hmm. that as natural materials, they work so well together in that way. So,
yeah, yeah. Well, it was very unique and distinct from anything I've seen before, but also felt very right. You know, the base gave it just like a firm foundation. So then whatever was going in that basket was going to sit solidly and securely. So.
Yeah, and it's been a short journey kind of combining those two materials together, but I am still asking those questions like, well, so then what does this mean about the functionality of that? And you think about a basket sitting on a kitchen countertop and the fact that this ceramic base is you're able to clean it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It in terms of its beauty, you're able to add these really pretty interesting colors to the ceramic that you might not be able to add to a brown willow.
Yeah.
So there's just kind of this, again, this play between form and function that I think is always just a fun thing to experiment with as an artist.
Yeah. 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 And you do have a willow basket class coming up in a couple of months with the folk school.
Yeah,
so that's
yeah.
a great opportunity for people to get involved, maybe see some of these baskets in person and get their hands kind of playing with willow, which is just such an amazing material. Baskets are, you know, to take something that is, you know, branches and you know, beaver food or whatever, you know, it just is growing wild. Once you see willow everywhere and
yeah.
so abundant. And then to turn it into these very functional, you know, vessels that hold anything, you know.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Beginning of March, I think, is when we've got the
yeah.
next class scheduled. And it's always interesting for me. I find myself as an instructor in these spaces really taking away just as much as anyone else. It's always great with the folk school to be able to have conversations and pick up on information from folks who are experts in their own areas, and I can ask them just as many questions as they ask me. So I'm sure that come March, I'll have all kinds of things to share, but also all kinds of questions for others.
Yeah, so that's one thing I have noticed in folk school classes is you're right there immediately with your people. You know, it's like if somebody else is also curious about basket making, then you probably also have a lot of other overlapping curiosities or crafts that you've played with other people, and the conversations are just great, and sharing that knowledge that kind of circulates while also learning or practicing a new craft is
yeah, and it's such a great circle to be a part of. One of the things that I know came up in the previous course that I had taught is the fact that I've worked exclusively with willow, a little bit of other things, some rattan, worked with sweetgrass, switchgrass, some pine needles. But one of the questions that had come up was, well, what other things around this area are good for weaving? And I kind of scratched my head a little bit and I said, well, I don't know if I can answer that. But then it started that conversation where others in the circle We're well aware of some other things that could be used, some other materials that could be foraged or used for basketry.
Yeah, and there are many, and those grasses are a great example, and you know barks and even willow bark, not just the whole cane, but lots of opportunities. But as you said, you are a generalist, so, and you mentioned, I know in your introduction, printmaking and some other things. How else do you use some of these other crafts in life, and kind of what other things do you get up to, or maybe start with printmaking?
Yeah.
I
think my exploring of different media is really just inspired by my curiosity to have my hands on new materials.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably why teaching art suits me so well, as I really do like the diversity. I like the variety and getting to change things up, but also using those media to sort of inform my practice in other media.
Yeah.
Further yet, I think that using art and using sort of this exploration of materials to practice my critical thinking and my problem-solving skills, things like that. I sort of use the art classroom as a way to build my resilience, right? To become okay with making mistakes, and also as an instructor and a teacher to hopefully embed that in other folks or other students, kind of teaching them how the art classroom isn't necessarily just this experience in a vacuum. It's ways to get us to think about, like I said, problem solving, critical thinking, thinking creatively about ideas, whether or not it's visual art or a craft making. Maybe it's something in life. Maybe you have to solve a problem, and maybe there are good ways to go about doing that. And I think that these are things that we can teach, especially in the art classroom.
Yeah, definitely. I think humans are driven to problem solve or create just throughout. I mean, that's, you know, maybe one thing that led us from out of the trees and into, you know, containing and creating fires and that just kind of, you know, got that ball rolling for humans. And, you know, then we just kept finding new problems and solving those. And then that led to shelter, and then, you know, and on and on and on.
I certainly know that it's in my nature to tinker and to toy and to build and to want to see things come to life. And I do. I think there's something very human, like on an evolutionary level, about sort of that just innate need to want to make something or build something and to figure things out, to invent, right? I think this is kind of the source of innovation and ingenuity.
Yeah, so. Definitely. And you are a teacher. What age range are you teaching?
Mostly middle to high school level.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So teaching in the La Crosse area for about a decade, and mostly middle school level arts. I do some outdoor experiential education as well, but a lot of my wheelhouse is hopefully teaching students how to engage in the world in all sorts of types of play. You know, at the end of the day, we can talk jargon and talk academics, but I just love the idea of both structured and unstructured play.
Yeah, well, that's what learning is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You can learn through sitting in a very, like, structured way, but I think the learning goes deeper or comes more easily with movement.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it definitely happens in an art classroom and then happens out in the wider world. So you lead not outward bound, but hikes and stuff. Yeah, tell me a little bit about that.
Very similar. I mean, as far as what I know about Outward Bound, a colleague of mine and I started an outdoor adventure club in La Crosse area.
Yeah.
And the goal of that really was to help students create relationships with like-minded people, to eliminate barriers to outdoor experiences, and to essentially just kind of create lifelong habits for exploring and having kind of a mind to conserve and preserve these spaces that we get to enjoy, especially in this area, when I think it's probably one of our most meaningful resources, to be able to show students how to explore and better understand our outdoor spaces.
Yeah, well, and they're so abundant in this area. We are so privileged to have, four seasons of great, you know, whether it's on the water in the summer or
yeah, diversity in seasons, but also a diversity in just these systems, right? So, I mean, we have wetlands and we have river and we have our coulees and our bluffs, and it's just such an awesome place to be able to sort of expose our students, our folks to these areas.
Yeah, and do you bring craft into that kind of environment, or do those overlap?
A little bit. And more broadly speaking, we'll do things that sort of maybe teach the fundamentals of weaving, right? Mm-hmm. So we'll bring out a little bit of fibers and strings and ask students to go find their own materials. So they might go find native flowers, or they might go find the grasses, and then we would give them sort of a really quick overview of the warp and weft and have them kind of take off, right? So that's that somewhat structured, mostly unstructured, like, here's a little bit of a scaffold. Now, let's see what you can do with that. So we do have a little bit of fun with that. We make sure to bring our materials and our ideas out and then let kids play when we get out there. So
Well, that's a great idea to give a new lens to look through. So, because you could walk by a wildflower or a pine tree or whatever and just, you know, acknowledge it. But then when you're told, oh, we're going to do some weaving, you know, then suddenly you're seeing like, oh, is this flexible? Will this fit in here? Will it lay against this? You know, can I layer this together? And you're suddenly given that pine tree or that flower or whatever you're walking by, like a new layer of understanding of like tactile and, you know.
Or even just giving students, or I experience this myself, the prompt or the initiative to look for colors or textures or things that might look or work well together in nature. It's a really interesting prompt that sort of happens through the arts. You know, I find myself doing the same thing. Last weekend, when I was visiting family for Christmas, we took a walk in the woods, and we were looking for birch handles my basketry, right?
Yeah.
So we spent, my sister, my wife, and I, we spent probably 10, 15 minutes around a down birch tree just looking for the unique textures on that tree. And I think the arts give us this really unique opportunity to sort of zoom in on the world.
Yeah.
And have these experiences that we wouldn't otherwise have.
Yeah, yes.
And I love that. And I think when you get into the story of what the arts are, that can look different for everybody. But I think if my pieces had a story, it would really just be my local experiences with the world. You know, the things that kind of make me go, aha, or, you know, me excited. So.
Yeah. Well, there's an abundance of opportunities in this area for people to have their aha moments.
Yeah.
Before we started recording, we were kind of talking a little bit about creativity and how, you know, it is an opportunity for growth. It is not it's not just some people are just born creative and other people are not creative, but that creativity by nature has failures, has successes, has just different opportunities to kind of, you know, learn from these like micro failures or like little successes and then tweak that to the next level. And you were really talking about how expansive that is for our thinking. You want to go into that a little bit more with that lateral thinking and yeah. How that kind of works for people?
Yeah, as a teacher and an instructor, not that I feel like the arts need to be justified any more than just being part of our nature, but in terms of teaching creativity, teaching problem solving, because I know that these are assets that that can be used in all facets of life, I really do think that there is something to teaching creativity. Some may innately feel more creative than others, but I do think that there are processes that can be taught as ways of sort of opening up ideas, you know. And we had talked a little bit before our recording about this idea of lateral thinking, which is a framework that I subscribe to when I teach and when I think about my own creative process. And really, what that boils down to is being able to take the opportunities during a creative process to, well, the words would be ideate and iterate, right? Mm-hmm. So ideation is just slowing down and asking yourself maybe what are the best paths moving forward. So if I were sitting down with an idea in a sketchbook, I might create 3 to 5 thumbnails of where I want my project to go. So applying this to the basketry that I've been working on for the last year, one of the big questions that I had was, how do I really get this willow to work with this ceramic, right? That was my challenge. So I might sit down with a sketchbook and I might sketch out roughly 3 to 5 to maybe 10 different sort of half-hatched ideas of where I think it could go.
Yeah.
And the nice thing about doing that sort of process of ideation is when you take an idea from your brain and put it onto paper, you can really start to see what works and what doesn't.
Yeah.
And it might not be one of those things that works. It might be 4 of them that kind of work. And then you can take those 4 and you can sort of consolidate them, bring them together, synthesize them, if you will, and then converge and move forward. And I think there's something to that called lateral thinking that allows us to sort of slow down during our process of creativity, whatever that looks like for you, and sort of just make sure that you have the best path moving forward. So I think there is a little bit of a process to creativity in that way.
Yeah, definitely. And almost like maybe getting them out of your brain and onto paper allows something new to percolate in your brain, because it's not also having to hold on to these ideas that are, you know, it's kind of like journaling or something. Like it allows you to, it's visual journaling in a way. And it's also a documentation of process.
And thinking about the kind of that idea of making mistakes and sort of shedding a positive light on it, I think putting something down on paper that might very obviously not be your path is one way of sort of being able to examine that, right? Or maybe it's not in a sketch. Maybe you go through an entire process of making a basket and realize that it didn't quite work out the way that you expected it, right? But being able to see the way that maybe you don't want it to go and to be able to visually critique that, I think is constructive. And I think there's something to that process. So on a longer timeline, I think we all have the ability to sort of embrace a growth mindset when it comes to mistakes. And, you know, failure is kind of a tricky word, that F word, right? Like, how do you approach failure when you see it? You know, I think just a couple of weeks ago, I was working on a ceramic base. And I had this hunch for hours that I was maybe taking it a little bit too far. And after hours of working and hand boring some of the holes in this ceramic base, it sort of crumbled in my hands. And I had this opportunity to sort of reflect and ask myself, okay, this is probably one of those opportunities where I would tell my students, well, what can you learn from this, right? Well, you definitely learned like what was too far with this material at this point. But maybe you take it as a sign. Maybe it's a sign that like we've got other fish to fry right now, or we've got other portions of this bigger idea to work on.
Not to take it as a sign of incompetence or not being worth pursuing.
Again. But maybe as a sign to slow down and problem solve. What went wrong? How can I fix that in a both, you know, formal way and a functional way? So.
Yeah. And, you know, all of this is so, like, as with most crafts, you know, they're very much like hands hands-on, you know, learning that like dexterity, learning that strength, you know, gaining kind of an adeptness with working with your hands is such a valuable like skill to have. It's not just craft for craft's sake, but it's craft for like your hands working, your mind working, you know, that learning is all like it builds beyond just like that immediate craft or that immediate mistake or that immediate thing. Like it's bigger. It creates kind of a more complete self in a way. Or maybe I'm taking that a little too far. I don't know. I think that there's something very beneficial about keeping busy hands, and you know, that helps, you know, a whole human kind of experience and engagement in the world.
Yeah.
Definitely is how I at least feel like I have to engage in the world, is with, you know, lots of different crafts and lots of different tactile activities.
Yeah. And I think part of me is coming to terms with the fact that I love that so much that, you know, my wife and I have this conversation of are we human beings or are we human doings? And I think I might find myself more often on the side of being a human doing, just because I love that tactile experience of working with my hands and sort of, whether it's creating material or just tearing it apart, it's just this idea that I always love kind of tinkering, exploring things. And there is that sort of hand-brain connection for any listeners who do handwork, this idea of sort of how do you work with material and better understand it. And I think where you are going with that is I think there is application to the world or even metaphor to be connected to that, right? Mm-hmm. It's sort of like navigating your way through the world in conscious ways, I think is important. And I think you can apply that in art and craft.
Yeah. So. I'm curious about kind of that and working with your hands, but how you are seeing maybe, you know, over the past 10 years with students, as kind of people become more sedentary, we become more attached to phones. And I don't know if you're seeing a difference in students and how they engage or their willingness to engage or their willingness to try. Has that evolved at all in the last 10 years that you've seen? Or maybe that's on like the 20, 30, 40 year time scale. But I know it's a regular conversation of like, what are these phones doing to us?
Yeah.
And how are they changing?
I would say that to our students, to our kids' credit, I think the challenge is sort of continuing to introduce and reintroduce them to these experiences that we're talking about, mm-hmm. craft, handwork, the creative arts, being outdoors, because the challenge is sort of working with students who generationally are definitely more technology hands-on.
Yes.
And I think there's a certain ease in that. So to teach students the gratification of working with your hands and how good that can feel, I see it in our outdoor adventure club. I think that it's a barrier, but it's been an easier barrier to overcome than you might think, because students want to work with their hands. They want to play. They want to tinker. They mm-hmm. want to be outdoors.
Yeah.
You know? So to their credit, they truly want that and desire that, just like most or any human being does. But they have this remarkable challenge of being in a generation that's sort of saturated with technology. And I think that's kind of the role that I hope to play, is continuing to expose them to things like handcrafting, right?
Yeah.
Or just feeling that sensation of mixing paint together, because they're fascinated by it, right?
I mean, yeah.
Think about all the simple things that happen in an art classroom, like color mixing or the repetition in working with things like basket making, sewing, needlework, things like that, mm-hmm. right? Needle mm-hmm. felting, just this simple like meditation of poking away at something or weaving something in and out. And in
yes.
and out is meditative. And I think these are really accessible ways to teach students what might become lifelong habits in the things that they continue to do as adults.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, whereas in like a digital realm, you don't get to kind of walk away with like something you've created. You've got memories, you've got like an idea in your mind of how you spent time. But when you make something in an art class or a craft class or just on your own, you have like a physical evidence of how you spent time, or over time, physical evidence of how you've improved.
Yeah.
I think that's like very powerful and beneficial.
And there's probably a debate in here about sort of the meaning of putting time into something.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's at least a good conversation to have with students. I think it may have even come up in our last basket making class through the folk school.
Yeah.
Is this idea that handcrafted items, especially ones that you can use on a daily basis,
mm-hmm.
They feel so important to me.
Yeah.
Because it's not just the time that was spent on that, but it was the consideration that the person, the artisan, put into it, and then they made the choice to either gift that to you or take it to market and make sure that somebody else who would appreciate it can appreciate it.
Yes.
So I think there's something really, really important about not only putting our own time into what we craft, but also appreciating the time that others put into these objects, you know, because there's something very human about that. And that connection is real.
Yeah, yeah. And that, I know I've experienced as a knitter, often my gifts will be knit, things that I've knit. And when I set the intention to make something for somebody, that's like when the love starts. And then as I like am selecting colors and selecting yarn and then going through the process of like each stitch is kind of its little act of love and its little act of care. And then inevitably there's this finished, hopefully a finished product. And then that gifting and knowing that, you know, there is this item that is not just been, you know, bought and given or bought and used, but has been like crafted and then worn in a way that, you know, feels like that love like just keeps giving. And it feels like if I see something that I've gifted somebody like years later and they're still wearing it, like I am like flooded with like all the memories of making that and like the joy in knowing that it's been used and been like appreciated.
Yeah.
And I think that has like big deep ramifications and benefits in my life and hopefully, you know, benefits for the receivers of the gifts, but it's to give the gift is almost the biggest gift.
And I think you can, like I said, you can look at that through the lens of the maker and the receiver.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I spent a good amount of time when I was studying in college working with portraiture.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't help but ask yourself, well, what is the purpose of this? What am I getting mm-hmm. out of painting a portrait? Well, a lot of the portraits that I were painting were people for one reason or another other that I admired or that I found value in or kinship with or friendship with. And painting someone is spending time with them. It's mm-hmm. continuing to build that relationship. And maybe it's even if they're not in the studio, you're still spending time with that memory and that relationship. So I think making has a way of sort of, especially if your intention is to gift,
mm-hmm.
Has that way of you getting to sort of enrich your relationship with somebody that you care about. On the other side of that, we have my mom. She's she sews and she makes quilts. And
over
the holiday season, she made each one of my siblings and myself a quilt. And I've got in-laws, my wife's aunt, who is a quilt maker as well. And we use those in our everyday life. And to be able to sit with those and sort of the memory and the hard work of those people is much more much more fulfilling, much more meaningful than a blanket that you might buy at the store. Even though it fits the same function, it's the meaning that that I think is most important. So
And if you think back to like traditional quilts being scraps of clothing, then you have the stories of like, oh, that's the clothes that I tore when we were, you know, doing this, or that's the, you know, last little bit of something that's, you know, threadbare and worn, and that has that added level of
or maybe I was quiet about it during the gift giving process, but my mom's intention of sewing in a print that my brother had made on fabric into his quilt, I thought was something that was very, very meaningful, and her intention with that, I think, is also, I think the point that we're getting at here too. So.
Yeah, definitely. I worked at a quilt shop for a while, and it was often that people would come in with deceased loved ones, ties or shirts or flannels or something, some kind of thing that they were kind of known for. Like, oh, he always had this, you know, these flannels on, or always wore a tie or whatever. And then like finding other fabrics to complement those, and then able to like make this kind of tribute to that deceased person, but also kind of like giving a little bit of that person then to whoever is with this blanket. And it was a beautiful like memento.
And what an awesome and interesting way that materials hold memories for us. You know, they could be very personal, whether it's a tie or a shirt.
Yeah.
Or it could just be, you know, you stumble across something in the world that brings up a memory, a very powerful memory of something or someone.
Yeah.
Whether that was a traumatic or a really, really great time in your life. But the materials are such an interesting thing because of the stories that they hold.
I'm sure that, you know, on special occasions, we have special clothes for them because we want to like kind of honor that whole occasion with feeling a certain way in a garment or something like that. And it definitely is, kind of tied into our lives.
Yeah,
definitely at a deep level that maybe we don't always rationally understand, but we can feel it.
But when it hits you, it hits you hard, right?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And a lot of these materials we've been talking about are tactile. You know, clay is very tactile, and willow has, you know, this very interesting texture both before it's woven, but also when it's woven, and it has a sheen to it. And so it can be appreciated on both like the functional level, but also on a visual level. Like these are also art. You know, they may be craft, they may be tools in a way for containment, but they're also can be quite striking and quite beautiful, and you know, fill that kind of part of ourselves that, you know, we are always looking for beauty in our world and in our lives. It's why we curate our spaces and our clothes and our, you know, surroundings and our lawns and stuff is to find what we find beautiful, or to make what we find beautiful. So
yeah,
to be able to build that. You know, you can,
and it can't. You can't help but let that thought bubble up, especially in the making process when you're thinking about: is this item? Am I sort of seeking beauty in this item, or am I seeking function? And it could be one, it could be the other, or it could be both. And I think that exploration is kind of part of the joy of it.
Yeah, definitely. Probably a lot of our listeners are maybe crafters or knitters or quilters or maybe potters or whatever. But some people might feel like this is outside of their realm, or, oh, I've never been talented. I'm math, I'm numbers, I'm books, you know. Like, is there a way that you would recommend people, like I've heard people like, oh, write bad poetry or draw bad art, or, you know, just like little prompts to just like little ways that people can become more comfortable with just trying out their own creativity on some kind of level. Do you have students maybe that are like, oh, I'm not an artist. Like this, I can't do this. Like this isn't me. Do you ever like have that conversation or kind of face those kind of bit of resistance?
It's always, I think, a challenge that's unique to the individual, you know? I think one of the things that I find myself having a conversation about the most is that regardless of if you feel like you have the skill set to make art in sort of that traditional sense, I think we all have the ability to tell stories.
Yeah.
And I think that the sort of the technical skill that maybe some aspire to, or especially in adolescence, feel if they don't have the technical skill that they no longer are eligible to be a storyteller. I think that conversation is always a good starting point, right?
Yeah.
Most or all of my students have particular interests, whether it's sports or whether it's video games or spending time fishing or swimming with friends. They can all tell stories. And if we get down to sort of the root of what art is, it's storytelling in one way or another. It might be a direct storytelling, or it might be a document of the life that they've lived. But I think when you kind of infuse a student or another person's interest in that art making process, I think that's always a really great place to start.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what is it that interests you? Because if you are truly interested in building technique or simply being a participant in art making, it's always best practice to infuse that with something that you're already interested in, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah.
I like to think about that conversation as storytelling. It also makes this idea of what we're doing in the arts a little bit more accessible too.
Yeah, I like the idea of calling it storytelling rather than calling it like, oh, you're making this.
Yeah.
You're like, you're doing, it's got layers.
Yeah, and I think one thing that can be confused with your ability to be an artist or a storyteller is technical skill. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, some people feel that you have to have some level of technical mastery just to be a participant in this this idea of making. Right?
Yeah.
So I think, and that goes back to making mistakes. Everybody starts from square one. I remember 5 years ago starting with Willow being, I wouldn't say defeated because I had the right mindset, but I went and cut curly Willow off a neighbor's tree and just thought that I would figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, and it was fairly defeating because I really had no idea what I was doing. But I understand that there's a structure to it. I understand that there are mentors out there, right? It's always good to have a good teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, the creative brain in me wants to just tinker and figure it out.
Yeah.
But there are people who I can rely on to kind of make my way through it. And here I am 5 years later with a fair sense, fair enough to be an instructor with a folk school and be making artwork and work of craft that I'm fairly happy with. But I understand that it's been a process, you know? So I think that encouraging conversation about the fact that every artist starts somewhere or every kind of bigger, grander project starts from square one. And that square one can look kind of messy.
Yeah. So, yeah, I always tell my young son, I was like, if you try, you're never going to get worse.
Yeah.
You know, you're always going to make forward progress.
Yeah. Or, you know, I do everything from, I continue my drawing just to kind of keep what I feel like, keep my skills up, or I continue to tinker with different materials because I'm inspired by that. I even work with making music. So I'm in a band, and I think about that, this idea that there are some goals that I have that are longer term. Like, I don't think that I'll acquire the skill set in the next year to two years to do what I feel like I want to try to do with those specific crafts, whatever they happen to be. So sort of adopting that mindset that it's a long, slow process. And I think becoming okay with not learning quickly, you know, and like kind of working through that is also something that's been helpful for me as sort of an adult learner, lifelong learner, but also as a teacher to sometimes students who maybe don't see the fruits in working hard at something for a couple of hours. It might take you a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, at the least. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, curly Willow sounds like a challenging.
Yeah.
A challenging Willow to start with.
Well, to be fair, I had no idea
what
I was doing. That was a Willow tree, and I was going to use it to weave a basket, right? And there was a lot of missing information in between. But I think that kind of like drives that point home.
Yeah. Well, you know, and like you said, like the mindset is kind of the first skill, is to have like okay with failure.
Yeah.
Seeing that, like, oh, but I did learn that if I do this and then this, like, that small part of this failure did work.
And those aha moments, that's the joy in all of this, right, is sort of overcoming that. And then to have some of those memories in your rearview mirror, like, you once had this point where you didn't quite understand that process or that technique, and now you're past that and you're moving on to newer challenges or different things. I think that's all part of that sort of mindset of embracing challenge, embracing failure, and sort of understanding that with enough time and perseverance, hopefully that challenge will also pass.
Yeah. Well, and if it is something that you are committed to learning, baskets or otherwise, you know, the process is, it's not the destination. You'll never get to the destination.
Yeah, that's a great point.
You are living the process. You know, Even probably somebody who's been making baskets for, you know, their whole life, decades, and is, you know, very adept, probably still has something they could learn.
Yeah, and this
or
is
still do something differently.
And I think this is kind of part of the conversation. Well, is it process ultimately over product, right? Mm-hmm. So I mean, it's just like, do you enjoy it? You know, yeah. I have sixth graders who come into my art classroom who've got some of the most wise statements of any of the artists that I get to teach, because they say something along the lines of like, I don't think that I'm super good at this, but I really love to do it. I really love to just mix paint. It just feels so good.
Yeah.
It's like, isn't that kind of the point of if it feels therapeutic, if it sort of makes you feel at home in yourself? I think that's a
relatable one too, mixing paint. There's something magic about seeing those swirls come together.
I can't help but circle back to that example, because it is one of those tactile experiences that when you get students and their hands in clay, or you get them to, we recycle clay at school, and when they dig their hands into the slit bucket and to pull it out to dry out on the table, they're just fascinated by it. They just want to stick their hands in the mud. And who doesn't, right?
Yeah, I mean, yes.
So just getting them to experience those things is pretty magical.
Yeah. I think that, you know, any of us that went through like public school can kind of look back on that art classroom time as a highlight of the day, and those tactile experiences, and, you know, getting to mush clay around, that feeling through your hands. This even came up in the last episode of the show when they were talking about building with Cobb, of just like that kind of tactile movement of like a heavy material being very like fulfilling.
Well,
I feel like, I hope this has inspired people, crafters or not crafters, to keep going, try again if they've had frustrations or failures on some things, and that gets people thinking about maybe taking up a new craft if they have one that they've loved but are looking for something new, maybe something like Willow.
Yeah, I personally look forward to continuing my journey with Driftless Folk School because of all the awesome classes and all of the awesome instructors that are part of this organization, and I can't wait to be a lifelong learner with Driftless Folk School in that way.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of great classes happening. We'll go over some of the ones that are on the upcoming calendar here in a little bit. But yeah, there's just something about even just looking through the list of classes that are available, and just going, ooh, I never thought about that, or oh, I didn't know you could do, you know, that kind of carving with wood, or that kind of, you know, making a container with birch bark. You know, there's so many that have inspired me and gotten me excited, and it was great to take your Willow Basket Tree class, and I know that the next one coming up in March is going to be a lot of fun for folks. And Clint Grabhorn, thank you so much for joining me today here in the studio. It was a really fun conversation, a wide-ranging conversation.
Thanks for having me. I feel like we could probably sit and talk for another few hours and be long-winded like this.
Yes. Well, you know, craft is in my blood, and that is why I'm here with the Folk School, and love being a part of that bigger picture and being a crafter in my day-to-day life. So thank you so much.
Yeah,
and
thank you.
We will look forward to seeing you more around the Driftless Folk School. Okay, so we've got some fun things coming up at the Driftless Folk School just this coming Saturday on that 31st. We got our Winter Barn Dance over in Lafarge at the Community Center, and that's from 5 o'clock until 9 o'clock, starting with a potluck. So come join us at 5 o'clock, and then we'll begin dancing around 6:30 and have a ton of fun. So nice to get all hot and sweaty on these cold winter nights. So that's on this coming Saturday. And then going over into February, Winter Wilderness Skills with Nicholas Wazi Gale coming up, let's see, that third Saturday in February. We've got Introduction to Relief Carving with Kevin Ewing, and that is also on Saturday the 21st. There is Guide to Ecological Literacy in the Winter with Nicholas. That's in Sunday the 22nd of February. And then the Basket Class with Clint, who we've just been talking with in here, that's Saturday, March 7th. And that's a 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. And that's actually going to be up in La Crosse at the People's Food Co-op up there, where the restaurant used to be, right above on the second floor there at the People's Food Co-op in La Crosse. So that's great for all you folks that are based a little farther north. Bodrill Fire Starting with Nicholas Wazi Gale. That is a full day class in Lafarge, and that's later in March. So kind of ramping up towards spring here at the Folk School. We've got this great class on Poetics of Place, Writings at the Intersection of Ruralness and Queerness with Katie Hackworth, and that is going to be Sunday, March 22nd. That sounds super interesting, really beautiful. And then later March, First Aid with Linda Conroy, Fruit Tree Grafting. That is how we know we're into early spring, folks, is when Ricardo teaches his Fruit Tree Grafting class, and that's March 28th. That is a great class. It's just a half-day class in Rural Gaze Mills, but you learn a few techniques for getting scion wood and your rootstock grafted so you can get lots of apple varieties and other fruit tree varieties. And then the last thing there in March, we've got Value Your Voice with Allie Smalley. Allie was on our June show, so listen back to the June show if you want to hear more about Allie with the Value Your Voice class. Really beautiful conversation there. And then to wrap up March, we've got Herbs and Fermentation for Digestive Health with Linda Conroy. And that's that last Sunday in March there, and that class is going to be down in Gaze Mills. So lots of fun things happening here at the Folk School. Really looking forward to moving back into the warmer season. I know it's still only the end of January, but believe me, spring is coming, and I am looking forward to it. And so come dance with us this Saturday. Come get sweaty and stomp around and do a good old barn dance over there at the Gaze Mills Community Center. And then we will see you there, and we will see you around at some classes. And have a great evening, folks. Take care. Thank you.